It doesn't matter what family you have. It just matters if you love them or not.
All these people that's out there saying those things, look at yourself. You the one that got the issue.
It's absolutely one of the most important trials of my life.
This bill will divide our communities.
It will take us backwards.
It will affect us all.
I understand that we're being picketed by a group of homosexuals.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. United Methodists file for divorce, Australia's ScoMo gets burned for brush fires and bias, and timely retrospectives remember Proposition 8 and Stonewall. Those stories and more this week because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Laura Dickinson Turner.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the 3 weeks ending January 4th, 2020. The United Methodist Church's LGBTQ inclusion supporters and its traditionalist conservative wing are about to split. Officials of the worldwide 80 million member Christian denomination announced the amicable separation on January 3rd. Ordinations of queer clergy and same-gender weddings have roiled the third-largest denomination in the U.S. for several years. The divide would occur later this year. Officials said that the split between pro- and anti-LGBTQ wings would affect the entire denomination around the world. The church claims more than 13 million members in the U.S. and some 67 million members in other countries. A substantial number of congregations are in Africa. Under the planned Protocol of Reconciliation and Grace Through Separation, the Queer Inclusive Branch would adopt official policies affirming queer clergy and lesbian and gay marriage ceremonies. $25 million would be allocated over 4 years for the traditionalist group to establish itself. The plan still needs to be approved at the church's next general conference, scheduled for May 2020 in Minneapolis, Minnesota. New York Conference Bishop Thomas Bickerton was on the planning committee. He said that the protocol provides a pathway that acknowledges our differences, respects everyone in the process, and graciously allows us to continue to live out the mission of making disciples of Jesus Christ.
In his seemingly obsessive goal to overturn all things Obama, U.S. President Donald Trump's Interior Department has removed sexual orientation from its ethics guidelines about workplace discrimination. The Obama administration's 2009 guidelines had called for equal opportunities for all Americans, regardless of race, color, religion, gender, sexual orientation, age, or disability. Trump's revision means that gender now most likely refers only to being male or female. Gender identity is also noticeably absent from the new version of the agency's 14 Principles of Ethical Behavior. Internal documents obtained by the nonprofit Friends of the Earth through the Freedom of Information Act in November have sexual orientation crossed out in red. Just who did the editing remains a mystery. Interior Department spokeswoman Carol Danko called the revised guidelines just a simplification of terms. She told the Huffington Post that a number of courts have ruled that federal civil rights laws already protect LGBTQ people. Danko did not explain why the Trump administration has argued against that interpretation in 3 queer employment rights cases now before the U.S. Supreme Court.
Brazil's president, Jair Bolsonaro, made sure that journalists and LGBTQ people had an uncomfortable holiday season, and a Christmas Eve firebombing provided the homophobic exclamation point. During a press conference at the end of December, Bolsonaro was complaining about how he's being treated by the media. He is sometimes called the Donald Trump of the tropics, after all. In response to one reporter's question about corruption allegations against his lawmaker son Flavio, the president snapped, "Your face looks an awful lot like a homosexual's." Bolsonaro is infamous for his racist, sexist, and anti-queer remarks, including his oft-quoted claim that he would rather have a dead son than a gay son. Another one of his actual sons recently tweeted an image of himself with an assault weapon next to his kill, an image of the already famous drag queen son of Argentina's new president. Bolsonaro later issued a lame apology for his press conference outburst that many of his critics lampooned. Jean Willis is a former Brazilian congressman who had to flee the country after escalating death threats. He tweeted, "An awfully homosexual face with pride."
Anti-queer violence was already common in Brazil, but it has mushroomed since Bolsonaro's election. That mushroom exploded on Christmas Eve when several Molotov cocktails were hurled into the Rio de Janeiro offices of the comedy group behind a Netflix movie parody. In Porta dos Fundos's The First Temptation of Christ, Jesus brings home his boyfriend, Orlando, to meet the Holy Family. Happily, a security guard on duty December 24th was able to extinguish the flames. There were no injuries. A defiant tweet by the production company said the attacks made them more united, stronger, more inspired, and confident that the country will survive this storm of hatred and love will prevail along with freedom of speech.
Pakistan's Prime Minister Imran Khan began the new year declaring that his government is taking responsibility for the nation's transgender community. A new medical identification card makes them eligible for free government-paid healthcare services, including transition-related care. Trans activists have been increasingly vocal about routine denial of medical treatment, or, at best, harassment and ridicule from hospital staff and patients. Dr. Zafur Mirza is a special health services aide to the prime minister. He said the government plans to cure that problem by establishing separate hospital wards for transgender people. Pakistan legally recognized transgender people in 2012 with a third gender option on government forms and other official documents. However, trans activists say that only about 2,500 trans people are currently registered. Human Rights Ministry trans rights consultant Aisha Mughal said that the first step is to spread the word. It is just the beginning.
Croatian activists are calling the Zagreb Administrative Court's December 19th ruling for a same-gender couple's right to foster children a historic decision. The Rainbow Family Association has a lawsuit pending in Croatia's constitutional court challenging a law passed late last year that banned same-gender couples from foster parenting. The advocacy group hailed the ruling as the first time a Croatian court has upheld international case law and rulings of the European Court of Human Rights. That court has ruled that queer couples must be treated the same as heterosexual couples under the law. The Ministry of Demography, Family and Social Policy denied the application of Ivo Sigota and Mladen Kozik to be foster parents in late 2017. That led to the couple's lawsuit. The court gave the ministry 60 days to reverse that action and issue an unbiased decision. Sigota told local reporters that the couple had received a positive review after interviews and psychological assessments, but were eventually told that government policy prevented their approval.
A three-judge panel of Belize's Court of Appeal has unanimously upheld a 2016 Supreme Court ruling that overturned the ban on consensual adult gay sex. That ruling called the ban a denial of the constitutional right to dignity, privacy, equality before the law, freedom of expression, and protection from discrimination on the basis of sex. Activists applauded the December 30th conclusion of a nearly 10-year battle and a final appeal by both the Caribbean nation's government and the Roman Catholic Church. One of the veteran soldiers in that battle, Caleb Orozco, celebrated a renewal of hope in the substance of the Chief Justice's decision in 2016, which still stands.
U.S. Ambassador to Zambia, Daniel Foote, has been officially recalled. Foote had issued a statement in early December saying he was horrified by the sentencing of a consenting adult gay couple to 15 years in prison. The South Central African country's homophobic president, Edgar Lungu, said he would refuse to work with Foote and demanded that the veteran diplomat be removed. In what has become the rule rather than the exception in the Trump years, an administration source told Bloomberg News that the State Department has no immediate plans to replace Foote.
We're happy to report that a gay Saudi Arabian journalist in Australian immigration detention has finally been released after more than 2 months. He and his partner are known by the pseudonyms Sultan and Nassar for the protection of the couple and family members back home. Nassar was released on December 13th, but Sultan's release was delayed for 4 days due to what authorities called a clerical error. The couple fled Saudi Arabia after their worst fears about being outed seemed to be materializing. Same-gender sex can be punished by execution in the Islamic nation. Both men have now been granted what are called bridging visas that allow them to live in the country while their asylum requests are being processed.
Finally, an 11-year-old Cedar Hills, Utah fifth grader defended his gay dads during their mid-December TV appearance on CBS This Morning. Ahead of the U.S. Thanksgiving holiday, a substitute teacher asked Daniel Van Amstel's class to say what they were each thankful for. Daniel said he was looking forward to his adoption by his dads. The teacher responded that homosexuality is a sin and that two men living together is wrong. She even asked the child if he thought he would become gay. Three of Daniel's classmates complained to the principal. The substitute teacher was fired on the spot and escorted off the school premises, still reportedly spewing homophobia. While one of the dads hoped for dialogue, Daniel would have none of it.
I would love to have lunch with her.
Mm-mm.
And sit down.
Why not?
I do not like her. If I ever saw her again, I'd probably have a heart attack.
Daniel made a simple case for the beauty of rainbow families.
It doesn't matter what family you have. It just matters if you love them or not. And yes, I do love them.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the 3 weeks ending January 4th, 2020. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to News Wrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out radio YouTube channel. For This Way Out, I'm Laura Dickinson Turner.
And I'm John Dyer V.
Inscribed at the top of the Supreme Court of the United States building is equal justice under law.
A day in the history of making that inscription reality, later in the program.
And number three,
National Basketball Association All-Star Dwayne Wade retired as the Miami Heat's all-time top scorer last season, but he's still making points for his gender-variant child, Zion. Wade has been fending off taunts on social media after posting about his support for Zion. He told hosts Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson of Showtime Basketball's All the Smoke podcast that he thought the focus should be on the kids, not the critics.
They're normal. They're not even different. You know what I mean? This
yeah.
is the new normal. Everybody get used
True.
To it.
Yeah.
Everybody get used to it, man. Mm-hmm. This is the new normal. So if anybody different, we looked at as different.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
The ones that don't understand it. The ones that don't get it, the ones that, you know, have stuck in a box. You're different.
True.
Mm-hmm. Not the people out here living their lives, man. You
right.
know what I'm saying? Like, ultimately, you want your kids to be free and live their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care, you know, what you want to do from a standpoint. If you want to play a sport, then play a sport. You don't have to be like me. Play a sport and be yourself. You know, whatever you want to do, it's my job to support you doing it. Make sure that you have all the tools you need to be, you know, as happy as you can be in this world while you're doing it, mm-hmm. Why you're growing into the person that you are, that you're going to grow into. So they're not different than normal.
Wade says that the key is in really knowing your children.
I watched my son from day one becoming to who she now eventually is coming to. You know what I'm saying? And for me, it's all about nothing changes with my love.
Right.
Nothing changes with my responsibilities.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So only thing I got to do now is get smarter and educate myself more.
Wade credits his actress wife, Gabrielle Union, with helping see differences between Zion and their other children.
I had to look myself in the mirror when my son at the time was 3 years old, and me and my wife are having conversations about, you know, us noticing that, you know, he wasn't on the boy vibe that Zaire was
mm-hmm.
on. And I had to look myself in the mirror and say, what if your son come home and tell you he's gay? What are you gonna do? How are you gonna be? How are you going to act? It ain't about him. He knows who he is.
Mm-hmm.
It's about you. Who are
mm-hmm.
you?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So all these people that's out there saying those things, look at yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Understand that you the one that got the issues.
Celebrated dad and shooting guard Dwayne Wade will be honored again in February when the Miami Heat retires his number 3 jersey. There's more than one kind of fire burning in Australia. The government's proposed religious discrimination bill is igniting protests across the country. The bill would allow providers of many health and public services to use their religious beliefs to harass or refuse clients. And it's backed by Prime Minister Scott Morrison, an evangelical Christian.
A bill has been drafted that threatens to divide our communities. The religious discrimination bill will give people a license to discriminate.
The bill would mean we're less protected under the law. It will leave us all vulnerable.
What constitutes discrimination today will be considered okay tomorrow. It will take away your rights at work, at school, and in hospitals when people say offensive things. Things like,
my waiter telling me that my relationship is an abomination in God's eyes.
My support worker telling me that disability is caused by the devil.
It's not okay for a manager to tell us that we are oppressed by our faith because we are women.
This bill could see some of the most vulnerable in our communities encounter judgment in closed doors
when they most need our compassion and support.
It's not okay for my nurse to tell me that HIV is a punishment from God.
It's not okay for a teacher to tell either of my daughters that my ex-wife and I are still married in God's eyes.
This bill will divide our communities.
It will take us backwards.
It will affect us all.
Our laws should protect all of us equally.
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 And this bill threatens that. We need your voice.
The civil rights group Equality Australia distributed that celebrity-led online promo to encourage people to contact their MPs to oppose the bill. Public comments can be submitted through January 31st. Meanwhile, Prime Minister Scott Morrison is being accused of fiddling while his country burns. Eamon Sandwith of the Queensland punk band The Chats sings about Morrison's religious bias and his response to the disaster in a new YouTube video.
The religious discrimination bill states he can do as he pleases. Scotty's always morally right, cause he believes in Jesus. He's a redneck racist right-wing clown. That's why Hope Scott's house burns down. He's a dimwit, dipshit, dropkick clown. That's why Hope Scott's house burns down. He's a hideous, hate-filled, homophobe clown. That's why Hope Scott's house burns down. He stacks till his jocks go brown on the day Scott Morrison's house burns down.
Look for all of Eamon Sandwith's I Hope Scott's House Burns Down at thiswayout.org.
One of those moments in history where, and if you were there, you just knew, this is it.
Relive it. After we revisit another pivotal moment in the queer liberation movement. Marriage equality had come and gone in the state of California, and the next chapter of the legal battle was just beginning 10 years ago this month. A challenge to the constitutionality of the equality banning Proposition 8 was going to federal court, the first federal trial over marriage for same-gender couples in the United States. Pacifica Radio's Christopher Martinez reported on the first day's proceedings in mid-January 2010.
Lawyer Ted Olson opened his case against Proposition 8 by saying plaintiffs are being denied both the right to marry and the right to equality under law. He argues that Prop 8 slammed the door to marriage for gay and lesbian citizens and, in his words, adds yet another chapter to the long history of discrimination they have suffered, all for no good reason. Lawyer Charles Cooper, for the defense, used different language to defend Prop 8. Talking about sexual embodiment, socially approved sexual intercourse between a man and a woman, and channeling procreative activity. The trial drew people from around the state.
It's absolutely one of the most important trials of my life.
Shelley Bales of Davis came with her partner of 36 years, Ellen Pontek. They were the second same-sex couple to legally marry in California. Pontek says she was especially taken aback by the arguments about procreation.
I think it was when they started off their side by talking about how marriage is for procreation. I just couldn't believe that they did that. So many couples marry who aren't having children, who can't have children, who have no desire to have children, who are too old to have children, whatever, and that when they said how important marriage is for children, it made us realize, of course, same-sex couples are having children at the same rate as opposite-sex couples, and if marriage is the best thing for children, it's the best thing for all children.
After the opening statements, the court heard testimony from plaintiffs in the case. Paul Katami testified that Prop 8 commercials about protecting children made it seem like he and his partner are a threat to children, but in his words, we just want to get married. During a break in the trial, lawyer Andrew Pugno, one of the sponsors of Prop 8, defended the Prop 8 ads.
We stand by everything that we said in the official campaign statements. A feature of the campaign was that when it comes to marriage and family and sexuality, those are issues that we think parents should be able to discuss with their children. And we made the point that children needed to be protected against interference with that important discussion by having gay marriage taught in the schools.
John Lewis of Marriage Equality USA was one of the plaintiffs in the marriage cases when the California Supreme Court legalized marriage for same-sex couples until Prop 8. He says lots of charges have been made against same-sex marriage and lesbian and gay couples, but now that Prop 8 is in federal court, evidence will show those charges to be scare tactics.
Today, we're commencing a historic trial where evidence will actually show that the freedom to marry is one of those constitutional rights that's guaranteed to all.
Whoever loses in the district court trial will likely appeal, and the case could end up before the U.S. Supreme Court. Despite the conservative leaning of the High Court, Lewis is optimistic.
Inscribed at the top of the Supreme Court of the United States building is equal justice under law. And that's what we're after, equal justice under law. And we know that justice and love ultimately will prevail in this cause.
The trial could end up running for 2 more weeks.
That was Pacifica Radio's Christopher Martinez in mid-January 2010.
Well, I understand that we're being picketed by a group of homosexuals.
For those of us who were homosexual, it was suddenly the realization, why are we being intimidated by a bunch of jerks who don't know anything about life?
You're all outlaws in the eyes of America.
The 1984 documentary Before Stonewall recovered memories of the rich history of LGBTQ life before June 1969. Those recovered memories have been restored in a new release of the film, and This Way Out's John Dyer V thinks they're more important now than ever.
As we enter the new year and a new decade, we like to set our intentions on improving the things we can, strengthening that which is functional and good, and fixing or healing where that is also called for. Most everyone today can identify too much with the latter, having to fix what is broken. And yet, a familiar dimension to us all holds a surprising amount of source material for such healing as so needed today, the dimension known as the past. While they say that history is written by the victors, it turns out that sometimes those victors are populated by the good guys. And gender considerations of that phrase notwithstanding, right now we can garner great strength, wisdom, courage, and sheer content from those truthful and learned record keepers. Such is the case with the newly restored 1984 documentary Before Stonewall. Directed by Greta Schiller and Robert Rosenberg, tightly edited by Bill Daughton, and narrated by acclaimed author Rita Mae Brown, this compelling and informative documentary shows us how far the fight for LGBTQ civil rights has come in a comparatively short time. Filled with firsthand descriptions of life in the closet during the 1940s and leading all the way up to the explosive nights of rioting at the Stonewall Inn in 1969 New York, we are witness to the people who were then believed to have no identity and no morality.
We can debate what is an illness,
or whether it is an illness or not, I happen to subscribe to the belief that it is a tragic illness.
I would say, thank goodness we are all so much more enlightened these days, but it is evident that today there are plenty out there who would willingly turn back the clock and thrust today's LGBTQ community firmly back into the Dark Ages, or worse. One of the wonders of this film is how many eminently historical persons, truth-tellers to power, groundbreaking social warriors, and just regular and fun folks are able to be seen and learned about in under 2 hours. From the very well-known pioneers of the burgeoning gay liberation movement, such as Harry Hay, Frank Kameny, Jim Kepner, and Dr. Evelyn Hooker, to the creative professionals and performers on the front lines, like Anne Bannon, Allen Ginsberg, Martin Duberman, Kenneth Anger, Jose Saria, and Barbara Greer, to the unsung citizens who simply wanted to be their true selves. This testament is a masterclass in civic deportment and still-needed societal reforms. Naturally, there are loads of great off-the-cuff quotes that also hit the bullseye. In referring to how nobody in the early days even conceived of being gay, quote, outside of the cowboys, because that was natural to them, unquote, or the mention of how important it was to camp it up before gay folks started to come out, with a mild lament on how gays aren't as campy anymore. The movie's fantastic restoration, produced to commemorate the Stonewall Riots' 50th anniversary, was released by First Run Features. Later in that year, the Library of Congress selected the film for preservation in the National Film Registry, and it was declared culturally, historically, aesthetically significant. Consider this. Around the turn of the 20th century, there was no word or concept for the modern term homosexual, and the first ever published novel addressing modern gay love was released in 1928. About a generation later, we arrive at the era of the Second World War, when Before Stonewall essentially begins, and in that light, we can see that it really has been an amazingly fast progression towards enlightenment. The breakthroughs are still happening, and it is intelligent, thoughtful, and profound chronicles like this that will keep us on the righteous path to true freedom for everyone in this massive and often bewildering society.
People quite often ask, well, what was special about that night, Friday, June 27th, 1969? There was no one thing that was special about it. It was just everything coming together. One of those moments in history where, and if you were there, you just knew, this is it. This is what we've been waiting for.
For This Way Out, I'm John Dyer V.
The restored version of Before Stonewall is available on most video platforms, including Amazon Prime. Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from John Dyer V and Laura Dickinson Turner, produced by Brian DeShazer, and from Christopher Martinez and John Dyer V, with a tip of the This Way Out hat to Barry McKay. The Chats performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson, composer, performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks all of the listener donors who participated in our 2019 year-end campaign, as well as the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KKFI Kansas City, Missouri, WBSU Brockport, New York, 2NCR South Lismore, New South Wales, and a wide array of community broadcast and online radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay tuned.